John Constantine, a Hellblazer podcast.
Everybody, and welcome back. Before we get into the episode, just want to let you know that this is the free version of the podcast, and all that means is that we are way behind where I'm at in Patreon. So if you are loving this podcast and you need more John Constantine in your life, definitely go check us out at patreon.com/planestrainsandcomicbooks and sign up for the Hellblazer tier, where you'll get access to the entire Hellblazer library that I've recorded so far. And also, you get access to the exclusive episodes of the Planes, Trains, and Comic Books main podcast. So if any of that sounds good to you, definitely go over to patreon.com/planestrainsandcomicbooks, all one word, and sign up there. And with that out of the way, let's get into the issue. Today we are reading Hellblazer number 61, and just a little catch up on what's been going on. In the last couple of issues, we've had a storyline where a demon known as the First is trying to get back at John. And this is the same demon that John was able to trick into curing his cancer and making this demon look like a fool. So he is after John because of that. And he originally tried to get at John through a demon named Ellie, who has an interesting relationship with John. In the last issue, we saw that in the past, 4 years ago, her and an angel named Tali ended up getting pregnant because they fell in love. And the only person who could help them in that situation, they figured, was John Constantine. So they went to him for help. He did his best, but he made a mistake in not thinking heaven would be after this child as well. So he protected them only from the demon side. And while Ellie was giving birth, angels showed up and took the baby from her and killed Tali. And the recounting of that story was pretty much the entire last issue. Nothing was resolved with the First yet. He is still after John. And that is what we're going to pick up in this issue, issue 61. And first things first, we got the cover here. We see John is leaning against a building very casually. His sleeves are rolled up on his long sleeve shirt. And it just generally looks very disheveled with buttons missing and also pulled out of his shirt. It's also covered with blood in places. And we see in his right hand, there is a straight razor blade. And there's also blood on that and his hand as well. And he's got an interesting face. It looks like he's just kind of staring into the middle distance, like he's just seen some shit and he's dealing with it. And we also see on the cover that this is written by Garth Ennis with art by William Simpson and Mike Barreiro. And we start off on the first page inside of Kit's apartment, where John is just kind of lounging around, watching her as she draws on a sketch pad. And as John watches her, it seems like she maybe gets the feeling that someone is watching her. And she turns back to look at John, and he is in fact staring at her. And she gives a smile and says, "What are you thinking?" And John replies, "How lucky I am." And then Kit gives a sly smile and puts down her sketch pad and pencil. And she walks over to him and straddles him on the couch and says, "You don't know the half of it." And then they proceed to make out on the couch as she passionately kisses him. Then we cut to John's demon friend, Chantinelli, who is waiting at a bar for John to arrive. And she's just sitting at a table alone, drinking by herself. And she's just thinking back to some of the stuff that's happened in the last couple issues. But at the moment, she's thinking about John and also how lonely she is compared to him. And so her narration is saying, "He's okay. He's got someone. I've been alone for so long now. It's cold. Tali. His smile was like the morning, and his eyes were pools of dew. I remember holding him and kissing him and making love in limbo while the world left us alone." And then we get a nice full-page spread of her angel lover, Tali, giving her a very full embrace where he's actually surrounding her with his wings as well. And it just looks like they're both perfectly content in this moment. And we also see the name of this issue is called "She's Buying a Stairway to Heaven." Of course, referencing the classic Led Zeppelin song, Stairway to Heaven. And this full-page spread of them embracing is the beginning of a flashback that recounts her memories from when she and Tali first had an encounter, and then the aftermath of that. And we're seeing Tali ask, "You are pregnant?" And of course, he's speaking to Chantinelli, and you can tell this is the moment that she dropped the big news on him, and you can tell by her body language that she was unsure of his reaction and what it would be, and also a bit like she's maybe ashamed or something. So as he walks up to her, she asks, "What will we do, Tali?" And he replies, I don't know. And she turns to look at him and says, "We cannot keep this hidden. Our masters will sense the child the moment it is born and slaughter us both. We will have to flee.
And Tali doesn't like the sound of that, and he says, I could not bear to leave heaven, Chantinelli. You don't know what it would be like for me.
And she gets very defensive at this because he said that in a very stupid way. So she replies to him, no, but then I'm just a demon.
And Tali tries to recover, saying, I didn't mean that.
And then she actually lets it go, which is weird because she's a demon, so you'd think she would hold stuff against people. But I guess she's in love, and she says to him, you're an innocent, Tali, an innocent idiot. You don't know. Rhys's sunsets on the black horizon, a sinner's scream in a silence like ice, the caress of dead skin in the cowl of the night. Is it my fault that I like those things? That I was made as I was? That my heaven was hell?
And then it seems like Tali understands and he says, I'm sorry, my sweet. We both have lost our homes. All we have now is each other. And for me, that is paradise enough.
Then we leave Ellie in the bar with her thoughts and we cut to hell where Triskele is looking out at the sunset and hell, I guess. And she says, sundown. I know it's not really the sun, but it feels the same.
And then the first who's in the same room as her says, shut up. I'm trying to find your stray bits, Triskele. I don't need your babble pissing in my ear.
And then she turns to him and says, what says the looking pool?
And then he turns to the ground and we see what the looking pool is. And it's actually a person that has been flayed in the center. So his abdomen has been pulled open and the skin has been tacked to the floor so it stays open. And then this person is still alive, of course, because this is hell and this is torture. And his torso, I guess, was then filled with water. And this is the looking pool that the first is trying to find the location of Chantinelli and Constantine with.
And as the first peers into it, he says, nothing.
Then we leave hell and we cut to John Constantine, who is inside of Chaz's taxi. And we see that in his hand, he is looking at a very sharp and shiny looking scalpel. And he looks pretty happy with it because he says, smack on. And then we zoom out and we see Chaz is sitting next to him. And Chaz is holding some kind of surgical saw. And Chaz is saying, you could have someone's head off with this bastard.
And then Constantine asks him, what's the damage?
And we don't know why Chaz has gotten these instruments for Constantine, but he is definitely selling them to him. And he says,
to you, mate, 50 quid. Martin's shagging some bird up at the hospital. She pinched him. What do you want him for?
And as John puts the instruments in a briefcase and leaves the car, he answers very nonchalantly, we're cutting someone open. Night, Chaz. And as he gets out, we see that this is actually in front of the bar where Chantinelli is waiting for John. And as she sees him enter and order something from the bar, her inner narration says, what's going on in your head, John? Will you save me? What will you want me to do afterwards?
And then as she's still staring at him from afar, he takes a drink and kind of looks over to her. And as he's glancing at her, she thinks, you're planning something for the future. Something dreamt up in a mind like an asylum. Mercy help me. I think you're going to take on hell.
And then John walks over to her table and sits down with the briefcase. And he says to her, still taking the hump?
And I had to look this up because I didn't know what that saying meant. And basically it means, are you still annoyed?
And she replies, I can't really afford to, can I?
And he says, right. I've been reading up and there is one way to sort this out, but you're not going to like it.
Then we cut back to hell, where the first and Triskele are still staring into the abdomen that is the looking pool.
And Triskele is saying, 3 hours in still silence. What does one succubus matter, more or less?
And the first replies,
she's with Constantine, you stupid hag. He could use her. He knows I'm going to get round his freaking bargain one day. He's planning for it.
And then all of a sudden, an image starts to appear inside of the looking pool, and Triskele says, my lord! And as the first looks down into the pool, he sees the picture of a house. And it seems like Triskele might recognize this house or think it's possibly a trick. So she tries to warn him by saying, but...
But the first isn't having any of that. He just says, come on!
And as they leave, the picture inside of the looking pool changes, and it looks like it's a pentagram and some sort of symbol in the middle of it. Then we cut to a house, which I'm assuming is the same house that was originally in that looking pool. And we have definitely seen this house before. This was the abandoned house from the last issue that Constantine brought Tali and Chantinelli to for her to give birth. And we see that even though it's been 4 years, it definitely looks like it's been abandoned. No one has fixed it up in that amount of time.
And John's narration says, familiar ground was strong magic, he said. We could play off the coincidences. There was a killing here the last time, too.
Then we cut to the inside of the house, and we see that it is in the same shape as the outside, of course. And there is a mattress on the floor that is covered by a sheet that is covered in blood. and we see a surgical saw lying on the floor, and there is actually a trail of blood leading from the mattress into another room. And that trail of blood leads all the way to the outside, where we see John Constantine on the porch smoking. Then he walks out from under the cover of the porch, and he walks over to one of the brick walls of the house, and he leans against it, and he says, "Jesus." And this is pretty much the scene from the cover, where he's leaning against a wall, and we see that his long sleeve shirt is rolled up on the sleeves, and it's kind of open and disheveled, and it's covered in blood, and so are his pants and his arms and hands. And it seems like he's exhausted, or at least something has taken a toll on him, because he's got his eyes closed, like he just completed an extremely hard task, and now it's finished, and he's kind of relaxing. But he doesn't get to relax for too long, because as he's leaning against the wall, we see the silhouette of the first rounding the corner that he's leaning against. And it seems that the demon probably meant to scare him, because he leans down and looks Constantine right in the face. But Constantine just opens his eyes, and he stares back, and they hold each other's gaze for a second. And then John kind of gives a sly smile, and the demon sneers back with contempt. And then we see above Constantine in a window, Triskelie is kind of hanging out it, sitting on the windowsill. And her body looks different than it does in Hell. In Hell, she has a snake skeleton for a body. But it seems for this trip to Earth, she has changed her body to a human skeleton. And for some reason, she's wearing a white dress that kind of looks like the same one that Marilyn Monroe is wearing in that famous scene where she's standing over the subway and the wind from the train underneath is blowing her dress up. So she looks down, and this is the first time she's seen John. So she says, "You're Constantine." And John replies, "And you're Triskelie." And then he notices her skeletal form and he says, "That's some diet you're on, darling." And it seems like Triskelie is offended by this, but she just kind of moves forward with the questioning and says, "What have you been doing here? And where is Chantinelli?" And while Triskelie is talking, John has gone back to staring at the first, and it seems like they're having a staring contest because they're both looking and they're both not blinking. So John actually answers her without looking at her, saying, "You see anything dodgy while you were looking for her?" And Triskelie answers, "Well, yes, a masking sigil obscured my view at the last instant, but..." And then John cuts her off saying, "Yeah, it's on her. I cut it into her soul." And then over John saying this, we see that there's a fleeting image of what John probably saw when he was cutting the symbol into her. And it's an image of Ellie screaming out in pain. And then we see the symbol that was cut into her soul superimposed above her. And Triskelie is very alarmed by this, and she says, "But only Iscariot has ever done that, and then only in the last Apocrypha." And John interjects, "She's gone, hidden. You can't sniff her out, not now. You lose again." And then we see he's not talking to her at all. He's talking to the first as he says, "You lose again," and the first looks very angry at this. And then John smiles and he says, "That's three times I've whooped your arse, sunshine. Round here we call that a hat trick." And at first I was confused by this, but Triskelie yells out, "No!" And I don't think we've come across this before, but later on they explain that this is because in Hell, the laws say that if you try something three times, you're basically done with it. So now that the first has tried to get John three different times, he is no longer able to go after him, at least by the laws. And John knows this, so he gives a smile and he says, "It's okay, love. He knows the score. He does me in now and he'll be eating shit for the rest of eternity." And then the first, of course, becomes furious, and he begins to clench his fists, and it seems like he's powering up, ready to give a killing blow to Constantine. But then he pauses because he remembers he hasn't figured out how to kill John yet and get around the deal that they made. And as he pauses, John teases, "You're not ready yet, are you? But you're working on it." And then John gets super serious and stares at the first and says, "Soon. I promise." So it seems like John is now threatening the first, saying he's going to come up with a way to make sure that this conflict between them will definitely have an ending. So John and the first once again have a staring contest, and of course, the first is the one who loses as he blinks and looks away. And then Triskelie and the first vanish instantly, and John takes a breath and says, "Shit." And then an evil smile creeps onto his face, and he says, "Forgot to give him the finger." Then we cut to Chantinelli, and we see that she is inside of the hotel that John got her when she first came to Earth asking him for help. And she's sitting on the bed, and she's kind of feeling her stomach, and it seems like that's probably the area where that symbol was carved into her soul. And as she feels the skin, her narration says, "No scar, just like John said. But I was torn to pieces. Sometimes you can see right through him." And then she stands up and pulls down her shirt, and then gets her things and leaves the room, and her thoughts continue. "Sometimes he does things, and you wonder." And I guess she's kind of saying here that she's wondering about John, and even she's kind of perplexed about where he stands in the balance of good and evil. Like how he told her that it was going to hurt, but it wouldn't leave a scar. And then when he did the carving, it ended up that it was way worse than that, as far as it hurt way worse than he said, and it felt like she was being torn apart. And he's done this kind of thing before with Chaz, where he lessens the blow. We definitely saw it when Chaz's uncle was killed, and when Chaz asked John if his uncle was in a better place, John just lied and said yes. So it seems like maybe John is sometimes more black in the gray than white. And we're still following Chantinelli as she's walked to a park and has sat down on a bench. And she's just thinking, watching people walk by, and her narration says, "I'm never going home. The sigil would destroy me if I entered the inferno. I'll never see my sisters, or dance with my queen, or gaze on the delights of the charnel wonderland. A demon without a hell, or a heaven. Perhaps." And as she's thinking, a woman with her child walks by, and the child stops to look at Chantinelli on the bench, and the girl looks at her and says, "You're very pretty." And this snaps Chantinelli out of her thoughts, and she looks at the child and smiles and says, "What?" But it seems that the mom has just continued walking, and the child walks with her mom away. And Ellie's narration continues saying, "A new heaven." And then she gets a hopeful look on her face, and she gives a little smile and says, "It'll do." And then this nice moment is cut off as John Constantine walks up behind her and says, "It'll have to." And then he sits down on the bench next to her and continues saying, "How are you feeling?" And Ellie answers, "Weird, like an itch I can't scratch or something. So, And then John finishes her question saying, "So what do you have to do to pay me back?" And then he gives an evil smile, and we don't actually hear what he says to her, but we get her reaction, and she looks very shocked, and we see her narration says, "So he tells me his plan. He talks about war, seduction, betrayal, a fall from grace, and revenge." And as John finishes telling her his plan, it looks like she thinks it's a good plan because she's smiling, and she says, "You're insane." And then John replies, "Nutty as a fruitcake." And then Chantinelli gets an evil grin on her face, and we actually see her pointy demon teeth coming through her mouth as she smiles, and she says, "Let's do it." And John replies, "Good girl. I'll get in touch sometime in the new year, huh?" And then John stands up and he does something kind of weird. He walks over to her and I think he's patting her on the head or maybe feeling her hair. And he tells her, "The kid was right," referencing the child from earlier who told her that she was pretty. And then as John walks away, she looks after him and her narration says, "And you wonder." And I guess she's just questioning because now John kind of said something nice to her. So it seems that she's just kind of confused by his actions and their ambiguity. I mean, that's why we all love John Constantine, because you can't pin him down and he's full of mystery. Then we cut to Hell, where the First is pouting and thinking on his throne. And we see that he's got a bunch of body parts just hanging from strings in the room, I guess. It kind of looks like he's trying to make a puppet or something, like a marionette. And the narration over this says, "Triskelie's head is spiked on Carrion Keep. Pure spite. A sigil on a soul? That takes power." And then the First says, "Well, I have power too, you mortal little shit." And it seems he's just talking to himself. But then behind him, someone says, "Ah, my lord." And as the First turns, he sees that the demon's ecstasy and agony have appeared behind him. And I believe we have seen them before. They are a male and female demon duo who are bound and lashed together by barbed wire. And they will switch places in this configuration depending on who's talking. So we see that the female demon is the one who's talking now, and the First says to her, "Agony and ecstasy, what do you two want?" And it's very interesting because it seems like they are scared of the First, and we haven't really seen them like this before, because normally they're just talking to John or Swamp Thing, but the way they're acting, it seems that the First definitely terrifies them, so she says, we heard of the incident with Constantine, Lord. It's, your third defeat at his hands. According to the law, he is now free, and you are meant to suffer instead. And the First just keeps looking at them, not budging or saying anything. And he's got a look on his face that says, "I dare you to try it." And as we turn to the last page, we see that there are more body parts hanging from the strings in the First room, and these body parts are now made up of the demon's agony and ecstasy. And we see their faces, and they look like they're screaming out in pain and terror. So it seems that the First has killed them for even thinking about taking him into custody. And the narration over this panel, as he sits there and thinks, says, "Constantine will still be his. He'll wait and plan, and then he'll make his move. and he'll haul the little bastard screaming all the way to hell. And that is the end of the issue. So if you guys have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email me at planes, trains, and comic books, all one word, at gmail.com. And we will see y'all on the next one.